Hello, welcome to Growing Wild, sponsored by Infinity Foods here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online and on digital. Welcome, I'm Charlotte Petz, and coming up on the show we have Alice Bettany taking us on a tour of her herb growing site at Sacred Earth, where we see what's growing and have a swig on a couple of the medicinal concoctions that she made while we were up there. We have Jane Perrone, who is the gardening editor at The Guardian, talking to us about her new podcast, On the Ledge. And finally, Charlotte Harris, who is the designer of this year's Royal Bank of Canada Garden for the Chelsea Flower Show. But first of all, let's have a song, and it's NWA, Express Yourself.
Makes it a cappella. I still express you, I don't smoke weed or sex. Cause it's known to give a brother brain damage. And brain damage on the mic don't manage nothing but making a sucker in you equal. Don't be another sequel. Spread yourself. My boy, and show you how your track.
What up?
Drop English right about now. Getting back to the PG, that's program, and it's easy. Dre is back, new jacks are made hollow. Expressing ain't the subject because they like to follow the words, the style, the trend. The records I spin again and again and again. Yo, you're on the other end. Watch your brother blend, dope bronze with no help. There's no fessing or guessing while I'm expressing myself. It's crazy to see people be what society wants them to be, but not me. Ruthless is the way to go, they know. Others say rhymes which fail to be original, or they kill where the hip-hop starts. Forget about the ghetto and rap for the pop charts. Though some musicians, cause at home they're scared to use profanity when up on the microphone. Yeah, they want reality, but you hear none. They'd rather exaggerate a little fiction. Some say no to drugs and take a stand, but after the show they go looking for the dope man. Or they ban my group from the radio here in WA and say hell no. But you know it ain't all about wealth, as long as you make a note to spread yourself.
The name for to make something dope on a record, that's what he came for. Kicking reality over staying itself, but it's important that you keep it in mind too. From the heart, cause if you wanna start to move up the chart, then expression is a big part of it. You ain't efficient when you flow, you ain't swift, moving like a tortoise, full of rigor mortis. There's a little bit more to show. I got rhymes in my mind, embedded like an embryo or a lesson. All of them expression, and if you start pressing, I got a Smith & Wesson for you. I might ignore your record because it has no bottom. I get loose in the summer, winter, spring, and autumn. It's Dre on the mic, getting physical, doing a job. And WA is the lynch mob, it's a macabre. But you know you need this, and the knowledge is going just like a fetus or a tumor. What is the rumor? Dre's in the neighborhood, and he's up to no good. When I start expressing myself, yell and slam it. Cause if I stay funky like this, I'm doing damage. Or I'ma be too hype and need a straight jacket. I got knowledge and other suckers lack it. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like. It's like we're getting hyped tonight. Cause if I strike, it ain't for your good health. But I won't strike if you just
spread yourself. Rest yourself.
Oh, lively start, wasn't it? That was NWA and Express Yourself. It reminds me of university days and not going to many lectures and thinking I wanted to do business studies. How little we know ourselves at 18. Right, so let's get on to our first piece. And this is Alice Bettany. She's a herbalist and she has a site at a place called Sacred Earth, which is out in Horam. And on that site, it's quite new for her, and she's growing her herbs that she uses medicinally for clients. So I went up there to have a look around and for her to show me the kinds of things that she was growing and what you can do with them. And it ended in us having a lovely couple of drinks from things that we'd found in the garden. So we picked this up. We've just gone into her newly erected polytunnel. And it was a really windy day. Everything was flapping everywhere. So if you hear any sort of background flappage, then it's the polytunnel out and latterly the yurt. But yeah, here we are in the polytunnel. There's a lot of sowing action going on here. What is it that you're growing?
Yeah, so we just started. I had some helping hands. You might be able to tell by some of the child's handwriting on a few of the labels. We had our community day on Saturday and we planted things like astragalus and sweet Annie and anise hyssop and holy basil.
So those names I'm not hugely familiar with. What are they, and is it specifically for herbal remedies that you're growing for?
Yeah, exactly. So I focus predominantly on medicinals, mostly to fulfill my dispensary needs as a practicing herbalist to give to my patients. I'm quite excited, really. This is the moment where I become a mum to like millions of little baby medicinals. And I feel very protective over them all.
Should we have a look around the rest of the site? So we're outside. It's a lovely view. We're on a bit of a slope and it looks out over quite a large body of water. And this is your outdoor herb garden.
Yeah, so I'm a subtenant at a wider land project called Sacred Earth. This site used to be a brickwork, so there's lots of free materials to use left over. Yeah, so I got lots of free bricks from a field over there once the pigs have been in, and we've wheelbarrowed them over, and I'm building a spiral bed over there. And I've got a new experimental Hugel bed at the end there as well.
What's a Hugel bed?
A Hugel bed is a German invention where it's basically like a sandwich of different ingredients, like kind of have a base of ash or cardboard and quite thick logs, very dead wood in the middle, and then just piling it up with any debris you've got. Lots of manure, lots of leaves or twigs or anything to kind of fill all the gaps in. So it's really, really heavy on material. But the idea is that it generates a bit of heat and all of that is going to compost down eventually. So it kind of feeds everything that you put into that bed. And also because it's very high, it kind of comes up to my waist almost. The idea is that you've got sort of double the surface area because you can grow down both sides.
Oh, wow.
So for small gardens, it's a really good idea.
And what is it you said about getting the pigs in? How does that work?
Oh, yeah. So Hathor Farm, Emil the farmer, and he has got pigs and chickens. And so he is going to get two of his larger sows to come in down half of this patch, and he just fences them off with an electric fence. And they'll completely clear all of those docks and all of those grasses that are unwanted to me. The manpower it would take for me to get in there and clear it would be months.
My back twinges just thinking about it. Oh, yeah.
They have the strongest snouts. They just push the earth up and dig down into the earth as if it's nothing. And there we would be in this sort of quite thick earth, kind of getting our spades and huffing and puffing and... Yeah, it's quite amazing watching them in action. So
okay, let's keep walking around.
So it's kind of early in the season at the moment, and I guess the garden's looking... Things are only really starting to sprout up. It's all looking a little bit bleak. We have got two plants here that are both in my respiratory wellness tea blend. This one is hyssop. So this is a very, very hot herb. It's got a really strong smell. Yeah, so hyssop, it has quite a strong flavour actually, and you can feel the heating in your chest as you drink a tea from it. This one is catnip, and it doesn't need to be crushed so much. It smells really strong anyway.
Woo!
It's Yeah, because obviously most people know it because they give it to their cats as a special treat. Mm-hmm. Has that sort of soporific lie down, roll over, go crazy kind of effect on the cats. But it's really calming for humans, and we would use it particularly for children with respiratory issues. So someone that was coughing a lot, that had a sore throat, that was prone to ear, nose and throat issues. So it's a perfect remedy for adults and children as well. Mm. I really like it. It's quite lemony. And actually, we've got lemon balm here. I think we'll make ourselves a wild tea while we're at it. So we'll get some lemon balm, some catnip, maybe some fresh nettle. That'll be a nice blend. So lemon balm is something that a lot of people have in their garden. It self-seeds really easily, so a lot of people curse it, I think. But the way to avoid that would just be to harvest it more often and use it and dry it yourself and use it as tea. Mm. It's one of our favourite antivirals, actually, in herbal medicine. And, you know, a lot of the mint families, we've got lots of antibacterials, but there's only a few sort of specific antivirals, really. I might just put a bit of nettle in our wild tea here with the catnip and the lemon balm. The nettles are just perfect for harvesting at the moment. They are ripe and succulent and green, and they're probably one of my favourite, most abundant spring medicinals right now. And it's so densely nutrient-rich, iron and protein and minerals, but also use it for allergies. So, you know, if someone was prone to hay fever, you would start taking medicine sort of prophylactically kind of now to lead up to the time where all the pollens are going to come out. So my favourite hay fever blend would be nettles, elderflower and plantain.
So I saw with the way you just pick those nettles, you're not wearing gloves. You've gone straight in there, pinched out the tops. But you're fine there, you haven't stung yourself. Just be bold.
No, yeah, grasp the nettle. I guess it's I'm used to it, and I quite enjoy that little tingly sensation that, you know, I do get, but I don't always get. I've heard of people say that they like to pick nettles because it helps with things like Raynaud's
circulation.
Exactly, it really cut it, because, you know, the process of the urtication kind of brings all the blood to the area and kind of gets it circulating. And I heard rumours that the Romans used to flay themselves with nettles before they went into battle, and also for erectile dysfunction problems.
Oh, really?
Ooh,
that is bold.
Yeah.
We won't be testing that one out today.
Yeah.
We've taken refuge even in the yurt.
It's a multi-purpose, beautiful, round-shaped yurt.
And we're going to use it for the purpose of making tea and trying out some various things that you've already made.
Yeah, so this is what I made earlier.
Very good.
Blue Peter moment.
Ooh.
It smells fresh, doesn't
smells
it?
Fresh. It smells healthy.
Yeah, yeah. So I imagine most people will be familiar with cleavers. As children, we would throw it on each other because it's really sticky, also called sticky willy. Yeah, I mean, it grows everywhere, all along the hedgerows, most people's gardens. It's a very familiar plant. So I chopped them up, I put them into a jug, and I filled it with cold water. And then I gave it a bit of a mash with either a potato masher would work or just a wooden spoon, just to kind of break up the plant fibres and to let its juice out. And then I left it overnight, and I've woken up, and we've got this this gorgeous kind of green juice to drink.
It looks similar to apple juice.
A bit cloudy, greeny liquid. Yeah, let's give it a try. Cheers.
Cheers. That's really tasty.
It tastes a bit cucumbery. It's a bit kind of cool and watery and smooth, that kind of that cucumbery flavour.
What health benefits does it have?
Well, cleavers is basically a top lymphatic herb, which means it supports your lymphatic system, which is essentially your immune system, to do its job. So they look a bit like a bottle brush with those sort of like circular leaves that go around along the stem. And in a sense, that's kind of the action that they're kind of having on our lymphatic system. It's like a spring clean. You can imagine a little bottle brush going up and down your lymphatic system, kind of going, wake up.
Yeah. And now we go on to the bits and bobs we collected as we were wafting out of the thermos flask.
Yeah, it smells divine, doesn't it? Mm. So we've got catnip, lemon balm and nettle here, all of which were looking vibrant and green in the garden. So they seemed perfect to make some tea from. I've just got a hot flask of water and we just sort of pick the leaves and put them into the flask to let them macerate for a while.
Okay, let's give this one a try.
It might be really hot, actually. Can't really beat a fresh herbal tea, really. It's such a good, useful way of getting herbs into your everyday life, really. I'd like to encourage everyone out there to go and pick a few nettle tops and dry them and, you know, store them in a jar and just make your own fresh nettle tea whenever you like. It's just so simple. I actually issue quite a lot of my patients with foraging homework. I see people from a shepherd's hut at Wayway campsite, and we're sort of surrounded by nature, and I'm like, you definitely need to drink nettle tea really regularly, or, you know, come and pick some sort of wild garlic and get those pungents circulating you, and encourage people to grow their own herbs in their garden as well, and to be more self-sufficient in their own medical needs. I feel like herbal medicine really is the medicine of the people, and that feeling of wanting people to take it back into their own hands. You know, I'm really happy to be a guide to help introduce people to the plants and to help them to know how to use it and what it's good for. But ultimately, my end goal for every patient that comes into me is to hand their health back to them.
That was Alice Bettany. It's so nice spending time with someone that's really found what they want to do with their life, and you can really feel that from her. She's really passionate about what she's doing, and it's palpable. She creates these quarterly medicinal herb boxes, and they're filled with various different bits and pieces which correlate to the season in which they will arrive for you. It includes ready-made products, but also the instructions on how you can make them for yourself as well. I really like that about what she's doing, is that she's giving it back to you and teaching you how to make these things for yourself. And it really is, it's such a lovely thing to be able to do. I did a course back in the summer, and just for a week, and learned how to make various different things and how different plants are good for us in different ways, and, you know, their medicinal uses. And it feels so connecting to our surroundings to learn those things and not to see them just as weeds and an annoyance, and actually see the value of all of these different plants and how we kind of grow together, and they aid us in so many ways. If you're interested in one of those boxes that she creates, I mean, alongside having all of the products within it, you get a consultation as well, and it seems like really good value to me, and such a great entry into that world if you're not familiar with it. You can find her at sacredseeds.co.uk, and I'll put that link up on the Growing Wild show page on radioreverb.com, and other ways you can contact her on there as well. Now let's have a song, and then we're going to hear from Jane Perrone. Here Comes the Sun by The Beatles.
Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. Such a beautiful song. This is Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Petz, and you're listening to Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM, online and on digital. Okay, coming up next, we have Jane Perrone. She is the editor for The Guardian Gardens, and she's an author. She's written a book called Allotment Keeper's Handbook, and the presenter of So Grow Repeat, which was a podcast that The Guardian produced that she did with Alice Fowler. And now she is the creator of her own podcast called On the Ledge, which is all about houseplants and indoor gardening generally. She's a self-professed houseplant nut, so she is really enjoying creating this. And we pick up this interview with her talking about why it is that she wanted to make her own podcast.
In no other area of my working life can I do exactly what I like.
Yeah, is that was that a big driving force for wanting to do it? I'm assuming that you're producing it, creating it, you're doing the whole caboodle.
I'm doing the whole kit and caboodle. Well, I think what it was like about 2 years ago, around the time that everyone else got into podcasts, I got into podcasts and started listening to things like Serial and This American Life.
Yeah.
And was very disappointed by a lack of gardening podcasts. And then I ended up doing a podcast with The Guardian called So Grow Repeat, which was with Alice Fowler, my colleague and garden columnist at The Guardian.
Yeah.
And she, and that was so much fun. It was just brilliant. And I loved doing it with her. And we just had such a laugh, which sounds terribly unprofessional. But I think
that comes across, doesn't it? When you're enjoying doing something, that is half of the game, really, isn't it? I mean, that's what, when I listen to a podcast and people are clearly enjoying it, if it doesn't become in-jokey, you know, that's slightly different. But and you buy into the relationship between the people doing it, for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it was such good fun. Unfortunately, it doesn't look, we did two sort of series of that, and, you know, we won an award for it and it was all great. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem as if The Guardian's minded to make any more of those.
Why not?
Please, if anyone feels strongly about this, write to
petition.
The Guardian. You know, that being the reality, I was having a chat with a guy called Peter Donegan who does a podcast. He's a garden designer.
The Sod Show.
And he has a podcast called The Sod Show. And I was having a chat with him recently. And I said, oh, you're making me want to do a podcast again. And he was like, well, just do one. I was like, okay, I'm going to do one. And I just thought, I'm just going to overcome all the kind of things that were putting me off, like, oh, I don't know how to do all this stuff, and just thought, I'm just going to do it, because that's how you do things on the internet, right? You just learn how to do stuff, and you learn by your mistakes, and that's how you get good at things. So I just decided to take the bull by the horns, and I decided that indoor gardening was a good topic because, A, I'm a houseplant nut, and I always have been. B, there just aren't any podcasts on this topic. There really aren't. So I just thought that was a good one to do.
So your podcast is called On the Ledge.
On the Ledge.
Great.
And
name.
I had so many names.
Did you? What else? What else was in contention?
My original working title was Keep the Aspidistra Flying.
That
until
is
I realized
wordy.
That nobody nobody had a clue what I was talking about.
People would just say bless you, I think, at the end of that.
I know. They were just like, what? I mean, somebody said, well, you know, Aspidistra aren't that popular as houseplants anymore. I'm like, oh, God, I've really missed the mark here. So I ended up with On the Ledge because it has to be short enough to, like, fit in a Twitter handle, or, you know, it can't be too long, basically. So that's what I've ended up with. And actually, I'm really pleased with it.
And what subjects have you covered so far? Because it's a new project, isn't it?
We're two episodes in. Episode one was about terrariums. And then the second episode is about Monstera deliciosa, the Swiss cheese plant.
Wow.
So it's, the aim is to try to sort of bring a rounded view on things. So in that episode, I talked to Bob Flowerdew about the fruit of the Swiss cheese plant, which few of us have had the opportunity to taste.
Yeah.
He grows it in his double polytunnel. And it also grows in various tropical places, but, you know, not currently stocked at Tesco, so most of us probably won't have eaten it. And then I also talked to Ethne Clark, who is a historian, about the sort of its use as a design feature in the mid-century modern era. So, you know, kind of trying to tackle it from different sides.
Lots of different angles.
And
having one plant as the theme for each episode.
Well, sometimes, I mean, I've got loads of interesting episodes planned for the future, and sometimes it might be sort of a particular theme or a specific plant. So I'm going to do an episode on microgreens, growing microgreens on your windowsill coming up, and another episode on office plants, what plants work well in an office setting. So I'm going to try to include some edible stuff in there because I know lots of people are interested in that side of things.
Yeah.
And I'm also planning an awesome episode about chilies. And I've got a great guy to interview for that episode who is an attack helicopter pilot and also grows chilies hydroponically on his windowsill. So he's going to be a really...
in the windowsill of the aeroplane, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know how... Anyway, he's growing chilies hydroponically on his windowsill.
Amazing.
When he's not flying attack helicopters, which I just kind of love that.
Well, we all need to relax. So.
Yeah, we do. So that's going to be fun. I'm trying to make it a little bit fun is my main thing. A friend of mine, a very old friend of mine called Mark Hamilton, who's supplying some wonderful voices. I've heard it.
He's
voices.
Brilliant. I like that.
Yeah,
so,
he's really good. He's really clever. He's a voice artist and he also does impressions. So he will be featuring in different ways throughout the episodes just to make it that little bit fun and not make it too po-faced.
Dull. Do you find that with... the world of gardening, it can be a little bit almost elitist. It's sort of, if you don't already know a certain amount, it's not particularly accessible.
Things like
say Gardener's Question Time, I mean, I've got friends that try and listen to that and it's just, they just don't understand what's happening. I don't understand any of the plant names that are being said. So it feels nice to be able to come in at a level that's just accessible for people who want to learn more and don't particularly know very much. But, you know, it's just a bit more, come in and find out this stuff.
Because there is a joy to things like botanical Latin. But if you're right, if you're standing outside that sort of circle and you're thinking, I have no idea what they're talking about. Yeah. I mean, I spoke to my dad. This is what a geeky family we are. I spoke to my dad about the podcast, which he hasn't yet heard because he's a bit of a Luddite, but he will be listening to it eventually. He said to me, have you mentioned Hypoestes sanguinolenta yet? I'm like, Dad, funnily enough, I have. Funnily enough, that's one of the plants.
That was
my first
sentence.
But only you would say that to me. Have you mentioned Hypoestes sanguinolenta? But I know that to nobody else is going to make any sense of that whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, so although I love the Latin names myself, I realise that it is very isolating if you think, I've got no idea what they're talking about.
Mm.
And all this talk, you know, you get into all this jargon, which is very inaccessible. And a lot of it is unnecessary, really.
Yeah.
It doesn't really describe anything particularly well. That said, once you do start getting in there and the more you learn and the more interested you get in plants, I think the more you can apply that jargon and see where things are useful. So,
having felt on the outside and now having worked in the industry for a few years and being on the inside, I sling Latin names around all the time because it makes me feel a bit more intelligent. So
I'm going to do an episode on Latin names at some point one of the things I want to say is actually, if you get into it, you can realise that they're telling you something.
Yeah, they're telling you something
useful.
Yeah.
But at the same time, but also don't feel intimidated because, as Bob Flowerdew says in the second episode, nobody's around that was you said that what spoke speaks Latin as
that's
a native
so
language.
True.
So if you're pronouncing it however you want to pronounce it, that's fine. You know, there's really no rules about this stuff.
Yeah.
So don't feel intimidated about, you know, saying these names as you think they're said, basically.
Good.
So hopefully it's all appeal to people who are very experienced growers and also people who are really just starting out and have got their first double Z plant or spider plant or macrame netting hanging fern and they just want to know how to look after it. That's kind of my aim, is to kind of draw those people in to understanding a bit more.
How frequently are you releasing them?
I'm trying to do once a week. Whether that will actually happen realistically in the long term, we shall see. But once a week. Some episodes might be shorter than others. just so I can get an episode out, because I feel like, from my experience of listening, once I really lock onto a podcast, I just want more of it. And yeah. I'm just like, when's the next one coming?
Yeah.
So even if it has to be a shorter kind of episode just to get one out, I think I'm going to try to keep it going weekly at the moment.
Good luck with it. And
thank you.
People can find it on all good podcasts, so iTunes and other platforms.
Yeah, Stitcher and that kind of thing. And if you go to my website, janeperrone.com, you'll also find a link to it there.
Brilliant. Lovely. Well, thanks for coming on, telling us about
Pleasure.
It. That was Jane Perrone, and it's a really good podcast. Houseplants are so not my thing. I'm terrible at anything indoor gardeny. I've had a listen of what she's created and learnt loads already. It's really good, and it is very accessible. So, and it's just nice to get more and more voices out there. I'm a real advocate of more people talking about all things green, really. So you can find her podcast on, as she said, janeperrone.com and on various different podcast platforms. I will put all of that up on the show webpage, which is Growing Wild on radioreverb.com. Okay, let's have a song, and then we're going to hear from Charlotte Harris, who is a designer this year at Chelsea Flower Show. Let's have Simon and Garfunkel.
When streams are ripe and swelled with rain, may she will stay, resting in my arms again. June, she'll change her tune. In restless walk she'll prowl the night. July she will fly and give no warning to her flight. August, die she must. The autumn winds blow chilly and cold. September I'll remember. A love once new has now.
Now, Simon and Garfunkel, April Comes She Will. There's a bit of a spring theme with some of these songs today. You may have noticed with our days getting a bit longer and the light drawing out, it feels like quite a long time that we've been in the winter. So it's nice to have these lighter songs, isn't it, and celebrate that a little bit. So I'd like to play just one more song before we hear from Charlotte Harris. And this is going to be The Colts and Go Outside, the message I'm pretty much always giving.
I'm not afraid to
That was The Cults and Go Outside. You're listening to Growing Wild on Radio Reverb. I'm Charlotte Petz and the show is sponsored by Infinity Foods. Okay, next up we've got Charlotte Harris. Charlotte is designing the garden for the Royal Bank of Canada this year for Chelsea Flower Show. And I wanted to go and have a chat to her to find out what it's like at this stage, because the show starts in May and we're only a few weeks away from that now. So I just wanted to find out what it's like to create a garden for that and the sort of pressure that you feel within it. I went up to her studios in East London and caught up with her in her stationery cupboard. Come up to the studios of Charlotte Harris, and we've walked into the, well, the storage cupboard is pretty much the only description of it. It's pretty high, it's stacked to the rafters with all sorts of bits and bobs and a toolbox, which is quite intriguing, and bikes behind us. So high glamour and
really canal view. Here.
Not the canal view I was expecting. So how's it going?
Well, I did have a moment yesterday where I thought it's the 22nd of March and it's really not that far away.
How far is it now?
So first week of May is when the build starts, so we're about 6 weeks away from, just under 6 weeks away from when we go in and start, put the first spade in the ground, which is quite nerve-wracking. Yeah, I am very anxious.
This is the first garden that you've done for yourself. You've worked on a few before this, though.
Yeah, that's right. I've planted 4 or 5 Main Avenue gardens. I've worked on, most recently, I worked on Hugo Bugg's Royal Bank of Canada garden last year, which was the Jordan garden. And it just got to a point where I thought, oh, I really want to challenge myself and step up and see if I can design a garden. So that's kind of what led to it. And Hugo was amazing and very encouraging and said, you should be doing this now. You should really be getting into it now.
And how does it feel? What's the difference between those two?
I think
scenarios.
A lot more sleepless nights, actually. Mm.
How's the Rescue Remedy stock?
Yeah, I advise everyone to take out shares in Rescue Remedy, because I think I'm bolstering sales. I don't think it's until you are the designer that you realise and this kind of drive for perfection at Chelsea.
Mm.
And trying to anticipate problems, trying to minimise any kind of doubts for those 2.5 weeks that you're building, and trying to get it all right beforehand and everything ironed out.
Mm. So that when you're there, it's just clockwork and you're not firefighting anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And also because there will always be problems. Mm. So minimising what you have to face means that you can give those time and space as they kind of arise.
Mm.
You just don't know what the weather's going to be like. You don't know if that's going to slow things down.
Of course. Last year was quite rainy, wasn't it, in the lead up?
Yeah, it was a chilly spring.
Yeah.
So we were, you know, we and the nursery were really nervous about the planting. This year it's more of a woodland pallet, so it's less of a kind of stress on that front. But, you know, if it chucks it down during planting week, I remember when we were planting Luciano Jubilee's garden and there were these fantastic, beautiful lupins in there, very delicate, and they had been carefully cared for to be in bloom, you know, just for judging day. And one of the contractors rang from the A3, driving up the A3 towards Chelsea, and said, I'm in a hailstorm and it's heading to the showground, and you're probably 10 minutes from it. And so the whole plant, and we didn't have very many covers because it had been a beautiful day, so everyone basically, and when I say they whipped off their clothes, I don't mean they whipped off all their clothes, but people kind of took off their coats and their jumpers, and we stood holding them over these lupins to protect them. So you don't know what's going to happen, and so you're trying to mitigate any of those crazy things that do.
Yeah, so wearing large coats is...
Yeah, so it's pretty... It's pretty. I'm not gonna be untruthful. It's really nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
And
the buck stops with you, doesn't it? There's no other person that's responsible. So
yeah, entirely.
Yeah.
And what's really lovely about it is you see the faces every year, and you kind of come back onto site, and everyone. I absolutely love it. I love the build-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Chelsea.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I surprised myself in that because there's lots of things about it which is a bit. It's a bit stuffy, and it's like that end of horticulture that's, you know, just so pristine and so manicured, and yet being around it, it's like the skill that is there and the showcase of what you could potentially create
it's something really special about that.
It is amazing. It is kind of we're quite weird, the British, aren't we? You know, in this sense of this incredible international global showcase of horticulture, and we love it, and you can tell we love it, and everyone is trying to do the best they possibly can, and that's whether, you know, whether the show garden, but also the nursery presence in the pavilion, for example, everybody is trying to be the best they can possibly be, which is really, I think, remarkable, actually.
How did you come to do this for the Royal Bank of Canada?
Well, I was just really cheeky and wrote to them, mainly.
Why did you choose them?
Well, I'd spoken to Hugo about them, and obviously they sponsored his garden. They are an amazing organisation in terms of their values and also what they want to achieve with the show and what they put behind the show to enable the designer to really focus on what they're producing for them. And I really like, you know, part of this garden and part of every garden that the Royal Bank of Canada have sponsored is about raising the awareness of freshwater resources. And this garden's no different. And I think the bank come to it with a really interesting corporate social responsibility approach, really. So I was really drawn to that. I was really drawn to the fact that one of the requirements was the garden had to go on somewhere else, which I think is one of the right criticisms of Chelsea, that what is the issues around sustainability, you know. And for all of us who love making gardens, we make gardens because we know there's something in the long term, and they evolve and grow, and there's something quite dissonant about something for 5 days, a showmanship moment for 5 days, versus what gardens mean for many of us. So the fact that for the bank it's really important it goes on somewhere, and their approach to it really appealed to me.
You went to Canada as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah. The area of Canada that the garden is inspired by, it's not replicating but inspired by, is the largest, it's seen to be the largest forest and freshwater in the world. So it's 29% of the world's forest and freshwater resources are there.
Wow.
And I wasn't really aware of it. I think we hear a lot about the Amazon and the impact that has on the environment. And so one of the things I said to the bank when I proposed it was that I wanted to go and research the habitat. I'm really interested in how landscapes feel and look. So I wanted to really understand the geology of it and the feel and the spirit of the place. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, lovely. How did you come to be in this world? Did you do a history degree?
Yeah, I did do a history degree.
So how have you ended up in garden design? That's a bit of a kink off to the side.
Yeah, how did it happen? Well, I think like lots of people, I have very early memories of being in the garden, with my mother particularly. That was the time we spent together at weekends. So I really put that, my love of, and also she used to take me walking an awful lot. So that love of outdoor space comes very much from her. And I think what the history degree brings to how I approach looking at a landscape or a garden is I really like unpicking how that landscape or that garden might have been used in the past, or what its narratives were, or what its land use was. Because I like making gardens, and the gardens I'm drawn to most that other people have made are anchored in it. And I think my history degree, I really value that for what that brings to it. Then I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I think many of us can relate to that.
Yeah, standard.
Yeah. But the kind of turning point, and I had a number of jobs. I worked mainly in fundraising and marketing for charities. But my parents died when I was 25, and I had a period of very severe depression. And I think, like a lot of people, gardening and the outdoor life gave that incredible sense of purpose and activity, and it became quite transformative for me. And I think any time I hear a lot of stories like that, and I think a lot of people get that, and it really unlocked that need to be more creative in my life and do something that I felt really passionate about. So really that's where it came from.
And sort of drew you back to those first happy memories of spending time with your mum in the garden.
Sure, yeah.
Kind of looped that round.
Went to work at Tom Stewart Smith's studio for 3 or 4 years, and the grounding, I mean, that you couldn't get a better grounding in both planting and detailing. I think he's a master. So
I don't know who he is. Who's that?
He's wash your mouth out with soap. I think it's 8 gold medals, 3 best in shows.
I should know who he is.
You will absolutely remember his when you see them. Like, you'll see, and he makes him very beautiful. Particularly, he has a very keen eye for broad landscapes. So that was an amazing place to train. And then I decided that I wanted to set up on my own. When was that? Maybe 6-7 years ago.
Oh, okay. So it's all quite recent.
Yeah.
You've charged along from doing your first garden 6-7 years ago to now doing Chelsea. That's really impressive.
Bloody-minded, maybe.
Yeah, dogged determination. Will you do it again? Will you put yourself through this again?
Probably not next year.
Everyone I've spoken to says that. I think it's like labour. I assume, it's that kind of trauma. And then you sort of forget it a little bit and do it again.
I mean, making a garden at Chelsea is really amazing because it means you get to craft 100% of the story, which you don't really... You don't get to do in the same way for clients. But equally, it is, as I said, it's a theatrical experience rather than a solid garden you're making for people to enjoy for a long period of time. So... I am really looking forward to getting back to that because I feel now I am almost 100% on Chelsea.
Well, good luck with it.
Thank you.
I'm excited to see it.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure you are as well, actually.
I'm excited to see it. I'm also excited to have a really big drink after.
You've deserved it.
That was Charlotte Harris. It's not to be underestimated, is it, what goes into creating these gardens at Chelsea? I mean, it's a lovely thing to go along to and enjoy with your Pims and your fancy outfit. But the work these guys put into those gardens is just enormous. So I have such a huge amount of respect for them. And it was really good of her to give me some of her time, and I enjoyed speaking to her. One question that I unbelievably left out while I was there was that I was quite keen to talk about the fact that she's picked an entirely female design team. And it's quite a conscious decision on her part to do so. All these women are experts in their field and have very much been picked for that reason, their expertise and their excellence in what they do. But it was still a very conscious decision for her to have an all-female team. And I latterly asked her this question after I was strolling down the canal and realised that I had forgotten to ask it. And she replied and said that the reason that she did it was, there's been many capable women at Chelsea, but consistently Main Avenue has such a strong predominance of male designers. In fact, of 225 Main Avenue gardens, only 60 of them have had participation by female designers, and only one of them having won Best in Show. So it's not about pointing fingers at them and being accusatory, but more about just showing that as an industry, we can all do things better and do our bit to encourage some diversity. Especially if we want to attract fresh talent to the horticulture industry, we have to lift people up and inspire them. Unless you highlight how odd it is that half of us aren't there, how do we expect it to change? And that's great, isn't it? She's just leading by example with a very strong team, and I am really excited to see her garden, and I wish her all the best over the next few weeks in getting that completed. We're coming towards the end of the show. If you want to get in touch, you can find me on radioreverb.com if you go to the Growing Wild show page, or I'm on Instagram and Twitter as @GrowingWildFM. And if you've got an email, any questions, or I'm always open to having content ideas. If you've got an exciting project on the go, then email me. It's growingwildreverb@gmail.com. I'm going to play you out with a couple of songs by The Smiths. Thank you for listening. Go well, and I'll see you next time.
When in this charming car about these things. I would go out tonight, but I haven't got a stitch to wear. This man said it's gruesome that someone so handsome should care. Together.